Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Tuesday, March 26th. I'm Stephen Overly. Artificial intelligence may be an emerging technology with regulations that are still largely unwritten, but the tension between big and little tech is already palpable.
I think there's a sense that it's elbows out at the moment somewhat, but that's because things have happened really quickly.
This is Linda Griffin, the Vice President of Global Public Policy at Mozilla. A lot of people know Mozilla as the creator of the Firefox web browser, but the organization is part foundation, part corporation, and most recently, an investor in startups. Its aim is to make free tech products people can trust. But Mozilla is a relatively small player on the global tech scene, and it's vying with much bigger tech companies for influence over how the rules of AI get written. Mozilla was in that position during the early days of the internet, back when it made Firefox, and Linda tells me it's back there again now, with AI. On the show today, Linda tells me why Mozilla sees competition as key to minimizing the risks of AI, and how it's looking to global regulators to level the playing field. Well, Linda, welcome to Politico Tech.
Thank you, and a belated Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone who celebrates.
Of course. How did you celebrate?
At home with my family.
Lovely. Well, I think when a lot of people hear Mozilla, they might still think of the web browser, but you're much bigger and more complex organization than that, part foundation, part company. How do you describe Mozilla when you talk to people?
So Mozilla is best known as the nonprofit behind Firefox, but we are much more than that. We are a product builder, as you say. We're a philanthropic organization. We're a community builder, an advocacy organization, and now we are also an investor. We started a venture fund recently, investing in responsible technology, and we've also created an AI research lab, Mozilla AI, to test and experiment and work with open models to see how we can create more useful building blocks for AI.
And so I know you're thinking about AI from a number of perspective and lenses. You know, I've talked to people who sort of think AI is going to bring about war and economic inequality and societal collapse. I talk to people who think the risks associated with AI are sort of here now around job displacement, bias. Where do you sort of fall on that spectrum of the risks around AI?
I like how you use the word spectrum. I think there's a real dichotomy when we talk about AI a lot, safe versus unsafe. The world go boom versus actually lots of, you know, great things that could happen now. And I think the reality is, and the boring answer is, like, all technology is risky and brings new issues for us and governments and others to deal with. I think at Mozilla, we're optimist realists. And we're looking at technology absolutely as to how it impacts people now. And there is a lot of people talking about AI in the future and the doomsday scenarios, but actually simple algorithms have huge impacts on people's lives already. And that's real, and we have lots of data and evidence. It's not headline grabbing, but that's stuff that's happening today that we can actually do something about. So we are thinking about that, but we're also thinking about the future. And I think when we think about the future, we're trying to think about how the web evolved. How do we keep AI open and accessible and more use for more people?
Well, that's one of the areas I know Mozilla has been quite outspoken on is competition in the AI space, which is very relevant considering a lot of the big tech players, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, et cetera, are big movers and investors in that space. Do you think more competition would help address some of those risks that you're talking about?
That's one of the lessons we have learned from the early web. And I think the lessons of history are always really important. They're clearly very important here today.
Right.
Having a handful of companies with walled gardens, with pure for-profit motives, is not going to create an environment where more people will be able to create more jobs and use technologies in different ways. So we have to spread the wealth and the benefits and also leave the room open for innovation. So competition is a key ingredient in all of this.
What is that ingredient? Sort of what does competition do that helps address these risks and just ultimately makes AI better for everybody potentially?
So I think it's really linked also with open source when we're talking about the web and tech development. Open source is many things, but it's also free things. And if you're competing against something that's free, that changes the price point, that makes you think about the different benefits you can offer the people that use their products and services, that keeps you on your toes.
I was thinking, you know, I'm sure you saw the news recently about the CEO of Inflection AI, Mustafa Suleiman, going to Microsoft to lead their AI efforts. Microsoft, of course, is a big investor in Sam Altman's company, OpenAI. It seems like there is sort of some consolidation or sort of early indicators of that in the AI space. Do competition regulators need to be doing more right now in the AI space, even in these early days?
We are seeing massive concentration at the moment. Again, optimist, realist. Maybe that's going to go in a different direction. And look, a lot of these companies are doing really interesting and important things and really like pushing the boundaries of what technology can do. There's space for private companies in all of this. However, what's the public counterpoint in all of this? Where are the free roads, the libraries, the public service broadcasters in terms of AI? And that's what we need to be thinking about. We're definitely seeing competition regulators, and this is really about technology, not just AI, thinking about antitrust powers and thinking about like old mergers and acquisitions that maybe have turned out differently than they thought they would. We're seeing in Europe, in the UK, places like Japan, Australia, really think about new powers for their competition regulators to be more proactive and to have a slightly broader toolkit to deal with some of these issues.
Is that something Mozilla's advocating for? Would you like to see more powers?
Very much so, yeah. And I think there's a lot of very thoughtful regulators. There's a lot of pressure on regulators thinking about technology, whether you're thinking about privacy, competition, safety and disinformation. They're having to work together more. They've been in their lanes. And now you're seeing them have to work together and think about that overlap and how that works with the kind of statutory powers that they have. So I think it's getting really complicated. But certainly a lot of the regulators we work with are thinking ahead and are ambitious in terms of their responsibility. And I think that's really great.
You're visiting Washington from London, where you're based. So you have a unique perspective here. Do you think globally competition regulators are collaborating enough? I know that's when one discussion, especially around tech, is sort of whether, you know, the EU, the UK, the US, these sort of conversations should be happening on a global level as opposed to siloed in each country.
I think there's collaboration nationally that needs to be done as well as internationally. So I think regulators coming from different aspects, whether that's competition or data protection, for example, are creating forums to work together and to talk together. And some of that is statutory and some of that is just better ways of cooperating.
Sure.
Internationally, I think there are some good conversations going on. And I think regulators are under increased pressure to do more with existing resources. So they're clearly thinking about what they can learn. And I can't speak on behalf of all regulators, but certainly the ones we're speaking to are really open to learning, hiring new people from different backgrounds and really skilling up.
I do think Mozilla has a unique perspective here in some ways, because sort of a brief history lesson for those who may not know, you know, you competed with Microsoft in the early days of the internet, right? Creating the Mozilla Firefox browser as sort of this rival to Microsoft's Internet Explorer. Do you aspire to do that sort of thing again now in this AI era?
Stephen, you took the words out of my mouth. Yes, we would like to do for AI what we did for the web 25 years ago. But look, it wasn't just us. It was a group effort. And that's another point. This isn't just about a handful of companies who are doing really interesting things. This is about like the regulators, the governments, civil society, and other expert groups like researchers and academics, how we work together. And that's the beauty of open source approaches. It enables us to work together and do more interesting things.
And so you've created an AI startup, research lab, if you will, that launched last year. And I've seen you describe that as a real alternative to the status quo in tech. What exactly are you doing differently than what the others are doing?
Yeah, so it's early days for Mozilla AI, but essentially we're trying to work with big open source models and turn that into, I suppose, building blocks that you can use that are trustworthy, that are safe, to build other things and to like provide specific useful services. So hopefully watch this space, there'll be more to come. But already the team, I mean, check out the blog post, they're doing a lot of work with the community and big open models are improving every day. So there's more we can do with them as well.
We'll be right back. When you're going in on open source, open models, obviously there's this debate right now, right, about whether they're safe, as innovative, et cetera, as a more closed model that some others in tech have advocated for. What's your case for open source?
Isn't it interesting how with open source and AI, we've got to make the case first, right? And that is the conversations that we're having and the questions we're being asked. Really, it should be about what are, like, let's really think about the benefits and what are the marginal risks? Where's the evidence actually that open source is more risky than closed walled gardens, black box AI? When you put it like that, it feels like technology and AI has lots of inherent risks, but actually open versus closed is the wrong way to look at this. Open is an essential part of how we make AI safer.
I'm curious just to hear a little bit more on that. What is safer about open AI versus closed AI?
open source AI enables us to do lots of safety testing. It's a transparent system where you can actually understand what data has gone into a model, potentially how decisions are being made. It enables us to understand better what's happening in the technology. It also enables lots of open science and research. The open source community is like a lot of volunteers working together to solve problems and to improve security. Most of the AI development we have now is built on open source foundations. And stopping that and closing that off because of this dichotomy that's being spread around feels like we're cutting off our nose to spite our face.
Do you think regulators get some of the nuances of that debate?
I definitely feel like that now. I think last year, we were a bit more worried that the debate was being simplified for, let's be honest, it's in the interest of many walled garden companies to phrase it like this. It's certainly in their interest. But I'd say the last 6 months of the conversation we're having with regulators is far more nuanced. They're really keen to get behind the research and the work we're doing. But also we need to do more work in this area. So that's one of the kind of the superpowers of Mozilla. It's our ability to convene. So a few weeks ago, we got together some of the leading experts on open source in AI, Columbia University, to talk about what does open source look like in the market now? Let's map it. How are people using it? And it is a spectrum. There's lots of different ways you can deploy it. So really try to map it. So we can have shared language when we talk about what open actually is operationally. And hopefully we can start working on some really big technical problems to solve and conversations to have. So that will be the first of many convenings we will organize.
Do you see yourself sort of competing with those walled gardens for influence in shaping this regulatory debate? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, those companies are very rich. They're very well connected. They've done this all in a big way with the internet. I wonder what it feels like to be in that competition, if that's how you view it.
I think there's a sense that it's elbows out at the moment somewhat, but that's because things have happened really quickly. And yes, a lot of companies are better resourced. Mozilla is a smallish organization compared to a lot of them, but we're a community, right? It's not just Mozilla. It's all the people who've worked with us over the years. It's civil society. There's a lot of us in it. And I think we're getting more organized and having clearer messages that we want to give to policymakers and coordinating with each other. So I think bringing that balance is really important.
I'm curious how data privacy fits into Mozilla's vision of a trustworthy AI, because AI arguably will make data more valuable than ever, more consequential than ever. But at least here in the U.S., we don't have a comprehensive federal, you know, data privacy. Yeah,
oh,
you know, exactly. You know. So without those regulations in place, with AI sort of coming on faster and faster, it just feels like that gets more consequential in many ways.
Yeah. And look, you know, I'm not based in the US, but I can really appreciate the conversation that's been had about federal privacy legislation. It's tricky and it's hard to do. We see a lot of states moving ahead. And I think there's people on the ground want to see this. And I think there's goodwill within Congress to think about this in the future. So I think very much Mozilla's here to support that. And privacy is the backbone of good AI and trustworthy AI.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, Washington is now debating how to regulate AI, whether that should be comprehensive or sector specific, whether there's enough urgency to get something done soon. Is it sort of a chicken and egg debate between data privacy regulation and AI regulation, or does one need to come before the other?
I mean, for Christmas, I'd like both to happen. But the executive order is like ambitious and comprehensive, and there's a lot in there. And legislation is one way for government to kind of pull a lever, but there's lots of other things governments can do to like achieve its ends. And what is the end? It's, I hope, and I think it's about how do we make AI safer and spread the benefits and the wealth of what AI will bring across the country and not just in a couple of states. So how you get there is up to each individual government. We'll be there to support them. But I think there's a lot of really interesting, ambitious things happening. And we're seeing Congress speak to a lot of stakeholders. They're educating themselves. I think we're seeing really positive signs in the U.S.
And so for Mozilla, if, you know, Congress came and said, how would you draft this bill? What would your top ask or top asks be of Congress when it comes to AI legislation?
It's about thinking about the public counterpoint. What are the things that are really important in terms of, you know, how do you want AI impacting society in the future? So there's lots of interesting things about growth, business, so competition, space for open source, a nuance in how open source is treated. So it grows. We have open science and research. The US has been a leader in open science and research. How do you continue that to the next generation of the internet?
And is there a specific policy ask and that would achieve sort of what you're talking about?
It's hard to say every, and I'm not trying to avoid your question, it's just every system is slightly different, right? And the EU is very set up for specific types of regulation, and they're very good at doing that. the US, it depends what's possible with, I suppose, within the confines of the system here. So it might be lots of different ways, but public procurement is also a great thing. You know, having making sure that open is part of how goods are procured is a really important lever as well.
You know, the sort of in that vein, maybe a question that will probably be hard to answer, but I'm going to ask anyway, which is, as we said, you're visiting Washington from London, but you work with regulators in the EU, in the UK, in the US. Who's getting it the most right?
You're not the first person to ask me this question this week.
What's the answer?
What's the real answer? We don't know. It's so early. This is like, and this is not my quote, but it's like regulating the cars in the 1920s. That's where we are with all of this right now. It's the very beginning. The EU AI Act has come under a lot of criticism from a lot of people who don't like the approach. Now, Mozilla has been very supportive. We've spoken to the European Commission about open source and the role there. We've also spoken about our support for risk-based approaches. I mean, that was the dream of big tech 10 years ago. Give us regulation that's risk-based. And now it's less popular. We're not quite sure we understand why. So look, let's see what happens. It's early days. The EU has taken its first stab. They will have to iterate. They will update the rules. Enforcement will be different over coming years. Like, this is the very beginning of something that's incredibly complex and that will always need to be updated.
Well, great conversation. Thank you for joining us on Politico Tech.
Thanks very much.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Brickmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley, and I'll actually be off for the next several days, enjoying myself in France, but several excellent colleagues will be taking over the mic. We've got shows about our competition with China over chips, the play Connecticut is making in AI, and a look at the historic role of women in tech, among others. So, we'll see you back here tomorrow.